Welcome to Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti, where we pride ourselves in being your legal concierge. At Conti's Law, we focus on estate planning, estate administration, tax planning, elder law matters. And if you listen to our past few shows, I've been delving more into the detail with the difference between what a will is and the various types of trusts. Revocable trust, testamentary trust. If you didn't tune in to us, I'm going to give you a brief recap of what the differences are. Obviously, a will is your legal document, which states who gets your assets, who gets your stuff upon your passing, and who the executor is, the person who's in charge of managing with the settlement of the estate as well as distribution. Then we have a revocable living trust, which again, keep in mind, is just like a contract between the party who created it, that could be the grantor, the party who manages it, that's the trustee, and who gets it upon your passing, that's the beneficiary. Then last show, we ended with discussing a testamentary trust, which again, is a fancy way to say a trust that's created in your will. So if you didn't listen last week, I'm going to continue with the example I gave. I have a will. In it, I name my executor, the person who's going to settle my estate. And I have two kids. And there's various reasons to create a testamentary trust. In my example, I said, I have two children who are minors. I want them to get my things, but I want to control when they get it and why they get it and how much they get. So even though I said upon my death, my stuff goes equally between my two kids, Zachary and Zoe. But it doesn't go to them immediately. So in my example, my kids are four. They couldn't get my stuff, but let's pretend they're 18 and they're twins. I don't trust them. I don't think they should get a large amount or even a little amount at 18. And what this testamentary trust does is allow me to put their share, their 50%, into their own trust to grow and be managed by my trustee so they don't use it for things that aren't reasonable. And I know I've always given you my story about the 21, 22-year-old who went out and bought a Bentley, or the kids who go and blow it by taking a trip to Vegas, or blow it by investing in something that's silly. So this testamentary trust allows me to name a party to act as the trustee. So in this instance, I'm going to name my brother, let's say. So Scott's going to be the trustee to manage and look after the money until my kids attain the age of distribution. So if you remember last week, I said my kids wouldn't get any money outright free of trust until they get a third at 30, a third at 35, and a third at 40. That doesn't mean my trustee cannot make distributions or invade that money, invade that trust, and pay for their education, pay for any health issues, health-related expenses, maintenance and support. Those are your typical standards of when the money can be invaded, so to speak. But the kids, my kids, won't have direct access to those funds. So let's get into, so we discussed the difference between the will, which is just an outright, but let me take a step back. What if you pass away without a will? You don't have any of this. And for whatever reason, I always forget to mention this. So if you forget or just don't feel it's necessary to draft a will during your lifetime, it's okay, because the state of Pennsylvania has put safeguards in place that if you don't have a will, based on the relationships that you have when you die will dictate who gets what, who gets your stuff. So in Pennsylvania, we cannot disinherit a spouse, period. They are entitled to what's called their spousal share. So let's say I die, I don't have anything in place, and I'm married. Well, don't make the assumption your spouse gets it all, because they don't. Do you have children in addition to a spouse? And let's go one step further. Are those children products of that marriage? Maybe they're not. Maybe you have kids from a previous relationship. Maybe you have kids from a previous relationship and kids from that marriage and a spouse. These are things we have to take into account, because based on the relationships and what those relationships are to those people when you die will indicate what percentage those parties get. So don't assume your spouse gets 100%, because that's not always the case. Don't assume your kids get 100%. Maybe you have a spouse and children from that marital relationship. Well, they get, each party gets something. Maybe you have kids from a previous marriage or previous relationship. They get something too. So depending on the relationships of those parties when you die will dictate who gets what. If you pass away without a will, you don't have an executor because you didn't name one in a will. You will have an administrator. That is still the party or parties of who will settle your estate. The difference is you have what's called an intestate estate, intestacy. You died without a will. In that instance, we have to see who's next in line, who can make those decisions. If you have a spouse, what if your spouse doesn't want to be the administrator? They can simply sign what's called a renunciation, and then the duties can fall to your kids. What if you don't have any kids? Or what if you have kids who don't agree? Let's say you have two children. Your son doesn't think your daughter is capable of settling your estate. Your daughter doesn't like your son. Somebody has to be the administrator. Somebody has to renounce their legal right to settle your estate. They don't agree. So do they both become the administrator? Do neither become the administrator? Sometimes we have the kids who disagree. Two say, yes, I want Joey to do it. Two say, no, I don't. Well, then the court has to get involved. So these are decisions you can make in your will or your trust document prior to passing, so the court doesn't have to figure it out once you die. But just know that if you pass away without a will, there are still safeguards in place. Your estate still will be settled. It just might take a few more hoops to jump through for those who you've left behind. Before I get into the details of why we would have a testamentary trust, I'm going to give you our contact information. If you're a listener, I have some of the same people who listen week after week, and they laugh because they say, Michelle, you're giving all of this information, but you're not telling us how to contact you. So rather than having you go on the internet and try to search for us, our telephone number is 724-784-0239. I will repeat that at least once, maybe twice more before the show ends. Our website is www.contilawpgh.com. That's contilawpgh.com. You can always email me. Remember, Michelle is spelled with one L. My email is my first name, Michele, at contilawpgh.com. So you can contact us several different ways, email, telephone. You can go on our website and fill in the form for us to contact you. Just make sure you include either a telephone number or an email address. Sometimes people will contact us and forget that information. I can't respond if I don't have your information. Same thing with Facebook. I have people who contact us on Facebook. You can do that as well. Whatever's easier for you. Remember, we offer complimentary consultations. We can come to you. You can come to us. We can meet in the middle. Whatever is easier and will make your life and planning for an unexpected illness or death just more comfortable for you. So let's get into this testamentary trust. So I've given you this example and I've belabored the point of I have minors. I don't want them to get it outright. Is that the only time you use a testamentary trust? And the answer is no. So this trust, if you didn't tune in last week, a testamentary trust is a tool that's created upon the grantor's death. So I'm the person who dies in my will or in my trust. I have this testamentary trust created for a kid. It could also be created for a spouse. Now I pause because a lot of people think that they hear me incorrectly. I said we can create a testamentary trust for your spouse. Why would we do that? A lot of people, and it's very common. It's very common. It's a sad story where, let's say, the husband becomes ill. The wife uses all of her energy and focus on taking care of her husband. And unexpectedly, or in the midst of the chaos with taking care of an ill spouse, becomes ill herself. That can be in many forms. You're feeling run down, you're feeling tired, and you're attributing it to the fact that you're focusing all of your energy and time on your ill spouse, when in truth, you're ill yourself. I've seen this with my grandmother and my grandfather. I've seen this with other family members and loved ones. I'm seeing it now where, what do we do in that instance where maybe your husband's in a nursing home, you fall ill yourself, or you've neglected yourself for so long? We need to be realistic. We need to make sure if something happens to us. So I'll put myself in this case. My husband's ill. He's in a nursing home for whatever reason. Some form of dementia, Parkinson's, stroke, something. He needs long-term care and I can no longer take care of him. I'm feeling run down. I'm feeling tired. I'm just exhausted. Lo and behold, I've neglected myself. And the doctor says to me, you have cancer. I need to make sure that I take care of my estate plan so that if, God forbid, I predecease my spouse who's in a nursing home, who's collecting governmental benefits. Let's say he's collecting Medicaid. If I pass away and I leave him something, keep in mind we cannot disinherit a spouse. If I leave him anything outright, his benefits may be jeopardized. He may lose those benefits. He may be disqualified from Medicaid, have to go through a spend down, a penalty period, prior to being able to requalify for Medicaid. And this is in the instance that if I'm gone, somebody else is going to help him apply and requalify. A testamentary trust that I create in my will that says upon my passing, my husband gets my stuff, but he doesn't get it outright. He's going to get it in a form of a testamentary trust for his benefit, where I name a trustee to his trust, somebody who's going to be able to take my place and manage and invest and oversee this trust. Keep in mind, testamentary trusts are irrevocable. But that trust will outline how the trust and the trust assets will be managed and those circumstances that it will terminate. So rather than have my beneficiary get a large sum of money, that's the instance with the minor, we create the testamentary trust to allow the trustee to manage and distribute the money. In my instance, this example, my husband has cognitive issues and he's on governmental benefits. I don't want him to lose those benefits just because I die. So we'll make sure that we plan ahead and put his share into this testamentary trust, which allows him the best of both worlds. It allows him to continue to receive those benefits. And it allows what I leave him to supplement his lifestyle. Keep in mind, governmental benefits only cover so many things, certain things. They may not cover new hearing aids, new glasses, haircuts, clothing. What if he needs one of those chairs or chairlift that helps him up and down? That governmental benefit may not provide for those expenses, and this testamentary trust will. What if the person I'm leaving it to has a drug or alcohol problem? Same holds true. What if I'm leaving it to somebody who has terrible money management skills? We work with a financial coach who will sit down with that beneficiary and help them, or even the parent creating it, and help them come up with a plan to make sure that that money will continue to grow, continue to be there for their benefit, but not allow them to fall prey to inheriting a large sum of money and blowing it. So we can put a trust together in your will or in your revocable trust that has very specific instructions or has very specific conditions or distribution timeframes, so that this money can be protected for your loved one. I always say we're controlling it from the grave. Some people like it, some people don't. But it's an advantage and it's an additional technique and tool that we have, so we can make sure we use everything the law allows us to use to provide for your loved ones. We can also create, and I talked about this a little bit last week, a supplemental special needs trust. And this trust is a tool that is designed to help take care of a loved one or a beneficiary, obviously your loved one, who has some sort of disability or who may be receiving some sort of Social Security supplemental income. So SSI. Again, maybe they're receiving Medicaid. It allows your beneficiary the best of both worlds to have this benefit continue, so they won't lose benefits, be kicked off of their benefits. This can be a disabled child or an adult that otherwise would be lost due to being over-resourced. I hear this a lot. You know, my mom left my kid, who has some form of disability, money in her will. She wanted to help to, you know, make sure that we could take care of Johnny. But she did it in the wrong way. She left it to them outright as opposed to in a third-party supplemental special needs trust. I hear this a lot over and over again. Unfortunately, if grandma already passed away and her will is being probated, it has to go to Johnny outright. Otherwise, he has to disclaim his interest in that inheritance. If he accepts the inheritance, then we're going to have to put together a first-party special needs trust, which goes against what grandma's plans were. If you have a first-party trust, it doesn't allow them to have their cake and eat it too. What it does is it states, okay, my benefits can continue, but upon my death, if there's any money left over, any governmental institution who was giving me benefits during my lifetime is now a creditor and has a claim and is a beneficiary of this trust. They get paid back first. So we have to make sure that even though grandma has good intentions to help with Johnny's care upon her passing, we have to make sure she's doing it and using the correct tool that'll allow Johnny the best of both worlds. So we have to make sure Johnny's not over-resourced while at the same time allowing for whatever the future holds. Health matters, education, any sort of lifestyle payment. We have to make sure that we plan. We want to make sure they're seen to, that their wishes, not only the decedent, the person who died, their wishes are seen to. We want to make sure the beneficiary is taken care of. For today's show, besides your will, passing without a will, a revocable trust, a testamentary trust, again, they all have their own places in this estate planning world. What about an irrevocable trust? Why would we utilize an asset protection trust? That's what we call it. For estate planning and Medicaid purposes. Well, just hearing the title of it, irrevocable, you know that it cannot be changed after we've created it. Once we've put something into that trust, so we transfer it into the trust, it's in there. The person who created that trust can't touch it. They can't change it. But if it's created in the right sense, if it's created using what the law allows us to, maybe we allow that person who created it some control. Maybe we allow them use of that asset that's transferred into that irrevocable trust. Maybe we name a protector trustee or protector trustees who will help and assist the creator of that trust to get something out of the trust. Now, in most instances, when an irrevocable trust is created, we're doing so that the creator can receive income for life. That person, again, is called the grantor, the person created it. But now this is if we're putting money, an investment, into the trust. The grantor is capable of receiving income, but keep in mind, they cannot invade the principal of that asset. Upon their passing, that principal is paid to whoever the beneficiary is. It could be kids, it could be grandkids, it could be another loved one. This way, that money that's in there is protected. Keep in mind, it's irrevocable. So once it's transferred, the legal title of that asset cannot be transferred back to the grantor, to the person who created it. And the principal cannot be transferred to the grantor. Why? If they get it back or they have control over it, they're available assets, available resources. And so usually we're creating these trusts for nursing home, long-term care purposes. That's just a little taste of the irrevocable trust. And I'll delve deeper into that topic next week. So you now have a broad spectrum of all the different trust vehicles we can use. Unfortunately, that's the end of our show. That's why we'll touch base on it next week. Tune in next week. And we'll go over a recap again and then focus more so on the irrevocable trust. But thank you for tuning in this weekend. You were listening to Conti's Law with your host, Attorney Michelle Conti. Give us a call, 724-784-0239. Until then, have a blessed weekend. Bye-bye.